The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, everybody.
Yeah.
Producer number 9. So much more than a producer. How you doing? You good?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm very well. You recovering okay?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
I'm just making sure. All right, we won't get into it. Kelly's doing okay. On the show today, Drew Dinsick will join us from both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast at NBC Sports. Talk NBA Finals with him, of course, and to see if he has any grass court tennis in multiple venues today, both on the men's and ladies' side. I will be returning to tennis here later this week. I've stayed out long enough. What did I stay out for? A week and a half?
We're at Nottingham.
We're in London on the men's side.
And
Halle. We'll do that with Drew a little later on the show. Jake Hahn, Stanley Cup Final, Game 6 tonight. We are at the reckoning, the day of reckoning, perhaps in both hockey and National Basketball Association. Mark Borchert from an undisclosed location in the desert on Major League Baseball. Also, where will Kevin Durant play next? Where will Giannis play next? There are markets that you could bet on. I don't know how much you can get down on these markets, but nonetheless, you can put a couple shekels on it. Yes?
I think Durant, this happens this week, Gil. I think this happens in the next few days.
It's down to three teams, right?
It's heating up, yeah.
Oh, no pun intended.
No pun intended, no.
Why would he go to the Heat, by the way?
I don't think he will.
Yeah.
We'll get to it next second.
All right,
I think there are...
Jumping the gun.
Yeah, we're narrowing down the list, though, that's for sure.
NBA MVP, NBA Finals MVP talk as well here on the show, because we got to get into that here with one or two games left. Is there now some doubt as to who could win this, given which team wins? And I'm talking about OKC and Jalen Williams. I'm talking about what the Indiana side of it. What does that mean to your betting? We'll get into that a little bit later on. As far as the game last night, game number 5 of the NBA Finals, the Oklahoma City Thunder take a 3-2 lead as they take down the Pacers, and in a plinko finish, a complete plinko finish. I know the last game. I know game 4 came down to the last possession, but I would argue that was not plinko. That was just Indiana losing the money for folks who bet on them in just the most ridiculous fashion. I would say that's the bad beat.
Yeah.
Last night was complete plinko to me. You had no idea where this was going to land. It was up and down. It ends up with the Pacers having the ball down 11. The close was 9 or 9.5, whatever you got the number at, right? And then the Pacers, they threw the ball away.
I love that you're starting right there, because we talk about, like, you frame it so well with the monthly wins of, like, these teams have no idea, you know what I mean, that
no
people
clue.
Are cheering things on. We're in back-to-back games now where Benedict Mathurin has been, like, the spread guy.
The villain.
Yeah, the spread villain if you've bet on the Pacers. And, like, I don't know about you. Like, I didn't bet it, but I played it in the contest. Played it in the contest for a killer sports contest. Yeah. So it's 9.5 there when I'm in on it. And I'm like, here it is, Mathurin with the ball, with a chance, and just drives it into nothingness and turns it over. And you're like,
all right,
thanks, Benedict.
And then the Thunder dribble the ball out. If you missed this game last night, I mean, it did get interesting. First of all, Thunder took at most an 18 point lead, 56-38, with 2:29 left in the second quarter. The Pacers had a TJ McConnell quarter for the ages. He had a great game 3, of course, did McConnell. We call that the TJ McConnell game. But then last night he was brilliant again, scored or assisted on 18 of the Pacers' 34 third quarter points. And the Pacers chopped away at the lead. Chip, 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 chip. You chip or chop? They did both. You understand. And it got down all the way. Once the fourth quarter started then, they chopped it down to a 2-point margin from 18-2, 95-93 Thunder with 8:30 left. Here we go.
So you chip away, and then it got chopped from 18-2.
You chip away, and then it got chopped.
Yeah.
Just clarify.
I don't know.
Anyway, from 95-93, again, a 2-2 series at this point, a 2-point game, 8:30 left. Well, that was it. Because after that, it was a 5-0 OKC run punctuated by a terrible turnover where Wallace stole the ball from Nembhard, breakaway jam. That made it 100-93 in a blink. Then at 103-97, OKC goes on another run to bust it open. A 7-0 run to make actually a 10-0 run when all was said and done. Four consecutive turnovers by the Pacers. The Pacers end this game with 22 turnovers. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Kelly, but if you're turning the ball over 22 times, and the other team is only doing half of that, you're probably not going to win many basketball games.
No, you're not. You know what the bigger number is within those turnovers? 15 of them were steals.
15
Oklahoma
were steals.
City grabbing 15 right out of your hands.
And as great as Siakam was, and he really is, I mean, if the Pacers are to win this, he's probably your MVP.
Yeah.
He did have 6 turnovers last night.
Mm-hmm.
The story down the stretch, though, because once it got, by the way, once that 10-0 run happened and it got to 113-97, I mean, think about that. From 18 points down to 2 and then in a blink back up to 16, they basically traded buckets from there, which led to that last possession where the spread was determined. And so here we are, Jalen Williams, a 40-point performance, 46-4, SGA 31-10-4 blocks. Third straight game, by the way, for Williams with 26 or more, 26-27-40 now. The fifth player, only the fifth player of the last 40 seasons to score. I was a little surprised by this. Only the fifth player over the last 40 seasons has scored 25 or more points in 3 straight NBA Finals games before the age of 25. Joining, you ready for this? Kyrie, KD, D-Wade, and Shaq. You don't even have to say their names.
Yeah.
So that's the list. Anyway, as far as this goes, the big thing moving forward. Oh, here's one, by the way. Scoring 40-plus points in a Finals game. The following players have never done that. Larry Bird never did it. The Dream never did it. The Mailman never did it. Kawhi never did it. And Dirk never did it. Never scored 40 in an NBA Finals game.
What's the most surprising name on that list, Steve, for this?
My initial reaction was Larry Joe Bird. But I'm going to say Akeem. That Akeem never got 40 in any of those Rockets Finals.
Okay.
Any of the two.
Because I kind of lean to the two later names, but I don't know. I guess Kawhi hasn't played in that many Finals games.
I'll tell you what the least surprising name was. Karl Malone.
Yeah. That was the easier answer.
I didn't really think he ever got 40. Moving forward, so by the way, now game 6, obviously potential closeout, potential championship game for OKC. They are 4.5-point favorites now at Indiana. Game 6, Thursday night. 4.5-point favorites where it stands right now. Could it go down? Will the markets say, we're showing 5 here. I see some 4.5s. Could it go down further where everybody says, well, you know, it's the proverbial must-win of all must-win situations. But here's the problem. Tyrese Halliburton last night. I mean, the big headline of the game besides the actual score. Tyrese didn't score his first points until a pair of free throws with 7:07 remaining in the third quarter yesterday.
Yep.
He finished with 4 points in 34 minutes. Finished 0-for-6 from the field. Took just one attempt after halftime. His status moving forward will be a significant storyline because all 4 points were from the free throw line. This because of what Shams Charania reported at halftime. Calf tightness. Had to leave the game, kept coming back. By the way, McConnell, 18 points, 4 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals in 22 minutes. Halliburton, 4 points in 34 minutes last night. Siakam, by the way, 28-6-5. 3 steals, 2 blocks, in addition to those 6 turnovers. So he was great. But anyway, Halliburton's the biggest story here moving forward. What can the Pacers get out of him? What do you expect to get out of him? And do you feel like if the market moves this shorter, they're like, well, the Pacers have, I mean, it's the ultimate must win, right? By the way, total 224.5. Then do you jump on OKC? I will tell you this, as a guy who has made good money on the Pacers up until the last 2 games, I'm kind of out of this the rest of the way.
Yeah, this is... I think the Halliburton stuff's really tough to figure out, right? It's how injured is he, right? I think there is something that he's clearly playing through. I believe we have sound from Halliburton. Actually, we could play this. He discussed it after the game last night, kind of where he's at and what he's feeling like right now. Or not.
I mean, it's going to be fine. It's the finals, man. I've worked my whole life to be here, and I want to be out there to compete, help my teammates any way I can. I was not great tonight by any means, but it's not really a thought of mine to not play here. You know, if I can walk, then I want to play. So they understand that, and is what it is, and gotta be ready to go for game 6.
And imagine being Rick Carlisle in this situation where you're like, okay, how are we better off? A hampered, to the extent that he's hampered,
right,
Halliburton even as a decoy, even a decoy. I mean, we're getting to the point where it's like, that's not even, it's like, can we get enough out of Halliburton that that's better than full strength McConnell
at this point? And this is where it goes back to what we've talked about so many times during this playoffs, where I think there is this, sorry if I get annoying with this, but I think there's this misconception of the type of player that Tyrese Halliburton is. I don't really know that he works as a decoy all that well. You know, we're not talking about a legendary 3-point shooter or something like that, that you can hide him in a corner. And when TJ McConnell's playing that well, it's something you kind of have to consider, but at the same time, if you're Rick Carlisle, like, you got to go down with the guy who brought you here, right? Like, you are not here if it is not for Tyrese Halliburton magic throughout the playoffs. So, I mean, it is the big question heading into game six, Gil. I mean, it's easy for me to say this now, but this is kind of what I thought going into game four, right? We talked about betting the series prices or the game lines in game four. And that's where I said I was going to make my last kind of final stand with the Thunder. I would bet them game four. I thought they'd be able to come back and win game five, but I thought it was very likely that the Pacers could go on and win game six. Kind of like you just said, though, I think I'm just on the sidelines the rest of the way, because if this is, I'm not going to back the Pacers in game six when his status is so up in the air.
And I think both teams at this point, both teams for what it's worth, can say to themselves, we should be out of here. We should have won this in five. Mm. OKC could say that because they gacked game one. Indiana can say that they were up 10 late third quarter, you know, in game four with lots of chances to increase that lead. Gacked that game. Forget about the cover. And then last night down two, right? Distilled to 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Well, if we just had a better 8 minutes and 30 seconds, this would be over. It is where it is, right? 3-2 in favor of OKC, probably where it should be given all that. But I've those last two losses betting the Pacers were enough of a take it on the chin thing.
Yeah.
Last night being the ultimate plinko, where I'm like, okay, cool.
Still be Pacers or nothing for me in game six, but give it a couple days. Let's see.
That's right. We'll talk about the MVP and how it relates to how your bets should fall a little later on. Let's talk some hockey. Let's talk some baseball.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. Where's all that? At sharpplays.com. Invite you to check it out. Have you checked it out yet?
Kelly, I have. Yes.
All right.
Reminder that this show is powered by KI betting analysis. Not quite as good.
KI betting analysis?
Yeah, Kelly Intelligence.
Oh, Kelly Intelligence. That's
right. Not quite as good.
No, not quite. I don't know. You say things like, well, I do think so. Maybe it is because you say things like JJ Spawn is legit, Thurston Lawrence is not. And then people 3-4 days later are like, thanks so much, Kelly.
That's true.
You got us a winner.
That's true.
I'm like, wow, you got all that from that? Let's talk some hockey. Game six of the Stanley Cup Final is tonight in Sunrise, Florida, where the Panthers have a chance to close out the Edmonton Oilers. Jake Hahn joins us now. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4, of course, co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show at SiriusXM. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing great, guys. Always love when I can join you guys, especially on a game day. Obviously, huge game six, cup in the building. And Kelly's right, by the way. JJ Spawn, I have to acknowledge, he is legit, especially with what he did over the weekend. Thurston Lawrence, I mean, he showed up at a couple majors randomly. Outside of that, totally not legit. And I also have to start to acknowledge, I think Ben Griffin might be legit as well. He doesn't look like he should be, but all of a sudden, he's just popping on every leaderboard every time I turn on my TV on the weekend. So I got to give him some props as well.
How did your U.S. Open go, betting-wise, for you?
Not well. Kelly knows this because I was texting him, and I can't complain because I did hit Ryan Fox the week before. So I don't want to get greedy here, but hey, we do like to get greedy sometimes. I had Sam Burns, who was looking great all weekend, even on Sunday after a blip early. He still got the lead going to the back nine, and then he really did catch some bad breaks on that back nine, guys. A couple divots. He lands into a water on the fairway, doesn't get his relief, so those are the breaks. I guess I kind of felt bad for Burns that's how it played out. But ultimately, he got a taste of the smoke at a major on the back nine, maybe a learning experience for him. And happy for a guy like JJ Spawn, who's grinded on the PGA Tour for a long time. I never in a million years would have bet JJ Spawn. So I certainly didn't feel like I missed out on anything there.
That positive Jake Canadian attitude, my remote would have been thrown through the sliding glass door probably if I was on Sam Burns at that point. Oh, man.
So cheery.
Made a play out of a puddle, Jake. They made a play out of a puddle.
I want to check who is the rules official, like Tyrell Hatton's dad or JJ Spawn's dad or some like Victor Hovland's dad. I've watched the whole thing play out. I thought, okay, he's going to get some sort of relief here. And I saw the videos after, and I mean, it was a huge problem. We all saw how the ball reacted off his club, right? And all the water that came up. I thought, really, they made him hit out of that? Like, that's kind of silly. I would get it if you're in the rough. You don't want to improve your lie, but you hit a fairway. So I don't know. Not a great call, unfortunately. But ultimately, JJ Spawn, well-deserved down the stretch to rally from that tough start on Sunday.
All right. Speaking of Canada, I don't know if you know this, Jake, but Canada, no team from Canada, has won a cup since 1993.
What?
When the Montreal Canadiens did it, yes. Also, Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season.
What?
Yeah. So I just want to ask you, before we get to tonight's game, about Game 5. We were back in Edmonton. Edmonton, you know, was a de facto best of three series. Edmonton had Games 5 and 7 at home. And they come out, and Florida takes a 2-0 lead in the first period. They end up winning it 5-2. Edmonton just didn't look good at all. And I'm being kind, I think. And my question to you is, listen, they were down 3-0 to the Panthers last year. They won three games in a row until they lost Game 7. If we're putting this together, and maybe I'm reading into this, does Edmonton have a pressure problem? Like when they got nothing to lose, they play great. When there's pressure on the line, they play poorly. Or is this just hockey? That's random like that.
I think this is the Florida Panthers. And we actually did a deep dive on this on our show on Monday, because it was our first time getting a chance to talk after that Game 5 that you mentioned on Saturday. And we went through all the results for this playoff run so far for the Florida Panthers. And in my opinion, when they get to their A game, guys, when they play this ceiling game of the Florida Panthers, I never want to call somebody unbeatable, but they are very, very difficult to beat when they play that A game. And if you look through the results, not only do they beat teams when they play to that level, but they beat them quite comfortably. And these are good playoff teams that they're doing that to, winning by, you know, 3-4. We saw what they did to the Maple Leafs in that Game 7, right? Just absolutely running them out of the building when they get to that A game level. And they just suffocate you. They give you no space out there. And that's the first time I think we really saw them do that for 60 minutes to the Oilers in this series on Saturday. Now, the funny thing with the Panthers is when they play their B and even C game, they still have a chance to win those games. That's when you see Florida either win or lose by one goal, where, okay, maybe you can get them a little bit and an opportunistic team like Edmonton can take advantage of it. So I hate to say it, guys, at least from an Edmonton side, if Florida plays their A game again tonight, this series is probably over, because it is so hard to beat them when they're taking away time and space the way that they did on Saturday. That really was the perfect road game that the Panthers played on Saturday night in Edmonton.
And do you see it going that way tonight? Do you see it being a closeout for Florida?
Well, again, it comes down to what kind of game the Panthers have. Now, obviously, they can draw back from the experience. You mentioned Edmonton, right, coming back from 3-0 last year. And this isn't 3-0, but the Panthers know, okay, we don't want to let this happen again. And at least last year, they had the Game 7 in their own building. This time, the Game 7 would be in Edmonton, which you could say would be a lot of pressure on the Oilers. And, you know, the Panthers have been a great road team, as they showed over the weekend. I think the Panthers get it done tonight, guys. Not enough to make a bet on that money line, though. I think it's a little too steep, getting close to that minus 150 range. That being said, I did take Edmonton before the series. It's just tough after what I watched on Saturday. And I just think the Panthers have that look in their eyes, knowing we're not going to let this happen again. We're not going to let them back into this series and drag us back to Alberta and have to ask those questions again. So if you're trying to make a case for Edmonton, they're in the exact same situation that the Toronto Maple Leafs were in the second round. They needed to win a Game 6 in Florida. Toronto went in and they shut out the Panthers and they dragged them back for a Game 7. So your case for Edmonton is, if the Leafs can do it, certainly the Oilers can do it, but the Stanley Cup final might be a different beast. And I just think the Panthers, they want to win this one in front of their home crowd tonight.
All right, let's talk Conn Smythe for a second here. With one or two games left, I'm curious if you still think that this is actionable. Sam Bennett of the Panthers, obviously Panthers up three games to do. Sam Bennett leading the entire postseason in goals, minus 150. And Conn Smythe, of course, a full playoffs award as opposed to the NBA Finals MVP, which we'll talk about later. Sam Bennett minus 150, Brad Marchand plus 370. And then the two Oilers, obviously, Draisaitl 7-1 and McDavid now plus 750. That, of course, dropping because the Oilers are down 3-2. Nobody else but those. Let's start with this. Nobody else but those four guys can win this at this point, right? No goaltender, nothing.
I don't see it. It would probably take. I mean, Bobrovsky technically could only have one shutout because if it came tonight, the series would be over. And I don't think that would be enough for him to get it done. And there's we don't even know who's starting for the Oilers in net tonight. There's that debate. I think it's going to be Stuart Skinner, but they're kind of leaving that up in the air. If you look at the odds and prop market, they're posting Skinner. So I feel like the odds makers have a feeling it's going to be Stuart Skinner tonight. But even if Skinner came back in, had a shutout in this game, shutout in game seven, I still don't think it would be enough to win it. So you're right. I think it's these four guys here. I've said Sam Bennett all along throughout the course of this series, and I don't think he's done anything to loosen his grip on the Conn Smythe trophy, but man, is Brad Marchand making a great case for himself. And I've said this on my show a couple times. He's strangely become a bit of a media darling now, this late part of his career. He used to kind of be the hated guy, one of the villains in the league. You know, not a lot of fans liked him. Even media didn't like him. But I feel like he's become likable all of a sudden. So that might play with voters a little bit. If he can score another big goal tonight and help them win the game, it might be enough to push Marchand over the edge. My vote's still going to Sam Bennett, but you have to give a lot of respect to Marchand, and it's still a pretty healthy number there, around 4-1 for him.
Let me just do the mathematics here. If Edmonton is plus 280 on the series price, right? They got to win two games. They're plus 280. Draisaitl 7-1. Connor McDavid plus 750. Obviously, shop around for the most for the best numbers. But if you put a unit on Draisaitl and a unit on McDavid, right? That's still a better play than betting the Oilers on the series price. Yes, I believe so. That's the way I would play it.
In my mind, that makes a lot of sense. And even if you were going to make a one unit play on the Oilers to win the series from this position, I think even a half unit, like take your unit, split it in half, go, you know, half to Draisaitl, half to McDavid. I think that's probably a better way to play it because I don't see any universe that any other Oiler would win the Conn Smythe if the Oilers ultimately do come back and win two games this week. So I like that way of playing it. My lean would still be towards Draisaitl. So maybe you want to even give him a little bit more in terms of that unit share. I do like Leon, but man, when you see plus 750 beside Connor McDavid, you think, can he put on that cape tonight and on Friday night and lead this team to a game seven Stanley Cup win? That could also be enough for him to get it done.
Yeah, of course, my scenario only works if the Oilers win it, right? Obviously, if they don't, then you've lost two units in that scenario as opposed to one. So that's the downside of it. So I am aware of that. But this is what makes all of this very interesting. And again, just to stress, it is not a Stanley Cup final award. It is the entire postseason where McDavid and Draisaitl neck and neck on points. Draisaitl obviously has the edge on goals, despite Connor scoring the other night. McDavid has the edge in terms of assists, but Draisaitl with the four overtime game winners, which is a record, an amazing career feat, let alone in one postseason. One would think, he says with his Draisaitl ticket, one would think that if the Oilers won this, it would go to him, but it is Connor McJesus. Jake, enjoy the game tonight. Hopefully we see a game seven.
I do think we could see our first under tonight as well, guys. Ooh, but I do hope we get a game seven. Let's find out.
My man. Thank you. Drew Dinsick next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now you can check out Greg Peterson's MLB Best Bets, Jonathan Davis's NHL Game 6 Picks and Props, and Steve Mackinnon's Power Ratings and Trends. And later today you can check out NBA Game 6 Analysis and Picks, Zach Cohen's Tennis Best Bets for Wednesday, and JVT's MLB Picks and Props. Right now you can sign up for as little as $9.99 to get full access to all VSiN articles. Just head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. We're talking about random sports off air. Also, not quite a sport, but a sport nonetheless in his own way. I reposted that clip that you and I had from 2.5 years ago when Oz the Mentalist, Oz Perlman, came on a numbers game and read me silly, called out the eight of clubs out of the pack. He was not even with us. He was not even in studio. He's remote.
Yeah, just on Skype.
Called out the eight of clubs, then randomly knew what random athlete that was thinking of. You got to watch the clip again after the show at Beating the Book. Can we try to get him back on, do you think?
I have emailed management team, team.
All right, let's get Oz back on.
They have not responded.
It was still in terms of they have not responded. I don't think he's too big now for us.
Oh, we caught him right as like he had been on like one thing. Yeah. Like you had seen him on like one national sports thing. And we were like, oh, that might be fun. Yeah. And then like after that, he's been on I mean, like, I think I saw something from Awful Announcing a few weeks ago, kind of killing everybody, every network for continuing to put him on, because it's the, I mean, it's the same thing every time, right?
Yeah, but I just want to say it's still one of the freakiest things that's ever happened to me. I still have no explanation for any of it. And as I watch other clips of him doing other things, I still can't figure any of it out. I'm just a dummy.
Couldn't get in the steel trap.
Couldn't get in the Kelly Bidlin steel trap.
That's the only way I think we're going to get him back on, is I'm just going to keep reminding him that
he's
0 for 1 against me. So
you can't read me O's.
How impressive can you be?
Yeah. Drew Ditzik joins us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, at @whale_capper on the old Twitter machine. You ever had an O's Perlman read you, Drew?
No. But I'm with Kelly. Like, mine's a steel trap.
No, I thought mine was too. Apparently, I am open as the openest book you'll ever find in the world.
That was scary as hell. That was like, I didn't think his thing was gonna work over Skype at all. Like, totally figured that had to be an in person thing. And yeah, that was incredible.
I don't know. I'm also
on Gil's Twitter.
I'm also one of these people, though. I will tell you this, and I shouldn't relate the two, but you know, like magic tricks, basic magic tricks. I'm like, what? Right? But when he does it to you in that fashion,
it freaks
you
out.
It's beyond a magic trick. It's an incredible thing. Anyway,
don't play poker with that guy.
Don't play poker. Yeah. Okay, before we move on to the NBA, so just the last thing about Wimbledon. Have you made any pre-draw women's side? I'll worry about the men, because obviously the men are top heavy with Sinner and Alcaraz. But have you made any women's side long shot plays pre-draw?
Hey, one of friends who matches outrights with me from time to time took Sabalenka against me. I'm against Sabalenka. I laid 265. I don't think that's fair at all. I think Sabalenka is being wildly overpriced for this tournament at this point. I think, although you see performances from the Andreevas of the world recently, and you're like, well, maybe it's a smaller mix than I thought. Ultimately, if I had to take one horse right now, it'd probably be Rybakina. I like the way she played in Paris, and I think just having having the title on her resume, and the fact that we now have enough space from the nonsense that was going on with her coach, is all a positive thing for her to have a pretty solid run here. I think she's your Berlin winner. Personally, and I think that she rides that momentum into a solid performance at Wimbledon. So against Sabalenka and on Rybakina, but the only bet I have is against Sabalenka.
Okay, to the NBA. Oklahoma City taking the 3-2 lead last night, game that they were up 18, then they were only up 92-90 with 8:30 left in the game, and then they run out the Indiana Pacers, who have a Tyrese Halliburton injury problem and just a general problem of trying to defeat the Oklahoma City Thunder defense specifically, which has just been absolutely phenomenal in this series. It is a Thursday night game in Indiana. The Pacers are 4.5-point dogs as they try to stay alive and force a game 7, which would be Sunday at OKC. Any play, by the way, a 224.5 number posted for the total in game 6. Any play, side or total here, Drew?
Yeah, I think you shop for an alt spread on the Thunder. I don't understand why this is 5. Halliburton is pretty obviously not 100%. And if he's not 100, I mean, what do we need Halliburton for when you have TJ McConnell? Am I right? I mean,
same play.
Like that was a spirited little moment there in the third quarter. But like, I am in no way, shape, or form interested in a Pacers as an extending play here with Halliburton limited the way he is. This injury is non-trivial. It's been kind of speculated that it's Achilles related, Achilles tendonitis, calf related. And I think that this is pretty clearly the worst possible matchup to have that level of injury, considering they have wave after wave of defender that can get very physical and may really make life difficult for him in this one. So Pacers to me are in a really, really just atrocious spot here. They're going to need every bit of, the supporting cast to have their best games of their best game of the playoffs, I think, to keep this one competitive. And while there are pretty clearly signs with the Thunder that are concerning, like Shea looks very, very tired. But that cuts both ways, because a lot of what the Pacers are doing to kind of make him tired is now affecting them. Through the full court press, through the super aggressive defense they're playing. And I'm not thinking that there is much of a glimmer of hope here that the Pacers can put up a fighting chance. And I think the I would lay up to about 9.5 here and feel pretty comfortable that this is the closeout spot for the Thunder.
Yeah, just to clarify, it sounded like Drew might have said alt under. He said alt Thunder. Just to be
alt
clear on that.
Thunder.
Alt Thunder. Alt yes. Thunder. Don't worry, that could be misconstrued.
I don't hate Pacers team total alt under, if you can find that, but that's a real niche market.
Let me ask you about a trade that took place on Sunday, the Desmond Bane trade to the Magic, where the Magic just gave up what seemed to me to be a ridiculous amount, 4 first round draft picks. We went through the details yesterday. I get it if the Magic thinks that Desmond Bane puts the Magic in a real true blue conversation about winning the Eastern Conference. Anything short of that, it seems like a haul that exceeds someone like Desmond Bane, Desmond Bane's level of talent. And he's great. It makes sense going to the Magic. I get it. The Magic are a terrible 3-point shooting team. He is great at that. He's great at the stop and shoot as well. They're specifically bad at that. But KCP and Cole Anthony go over there, plus a slew of picks. And Memphis is now also saying that they're keeping Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., which doesn't make a lot of sense. How do you read that trade? Does it move the gambling needle for you at all in terms of the Magic side of things?
A little bit. Not running to make a bet off of it. I think the Southeast goes through Orlando now, pretty obviously. Even if KD does end up in Miami, I still think that the team to beat in the Southeast is Orlando. And I would say that at face value, that's the type of package that you give up for a top 30 player. And Desmond Bane is not a top 30 player. He's more like 45-ish neutrally in the NBA right now. This isn't even including like the compensation part of it, but just from a efficiency standpoint, what is he? He's in the top 45 ish. The kind of important part though is he's not top 40 on the Magic. He's a humongous upgrade over what they were getting at the shooting guard position from last year. KCP going to Memphis is addition by subtraction. And then Bane coming in is kind of the perfect player to fit that system and really help kind of open things up for Paolo and Franz and really help those guys continue to develop. So this is sort of a bet on, the fact that you hit on your draft picks in Franz and Paolo. And I completely understand why the Magic would do it. By the way, it's not like the Magic have necessarily utilized their mid-round first round picks well in the last couple of drafts anyway. So, I think maybe they are looking at what is available at that point in the NBA drafts and deciding we're never going to get a player of Desmond Bane's caliber, even if we get 4 swings at it. So I think I understand the team building from the Magic side of things. And I think the fit is just absolutely as perfect as you could ever hope for. But it doesn't really move them clearly into the top 4 in the East, even with a limited Celtics team. So I think the over-under on Magic seeding for next year in the Eastern Conference is 4.5. If things break well, they're in the top there. They stay healthy. They're in the top 4. Otherwise, they could be in sort of that 5-6 range again. There's you need a humongous leap still from Paolo to be truly competitive and even in a weakened Eastern Conference. But Bane on the floor and the spacing that he provides and his ability to be a second banana as far as a creator off the dribble and his ability to to be a catch and shoot guy is huge for them. So
thank
I think
you,
that
Drew.
Was a win for the Magic.
Appreciate it. Drew Densick, everybody.